I don't always remember sermons that I preached a few weeks after I preached them. Moving on, moving on, moving on to the next one. So you won't be surprised when some years after I preached on this very story, a woman came up to me and said, "Do you remember that sermon you preached on Joseph 3 years ago?" I wished I did. "Well, I was so moved by it," she said, "so touched deeply, that I went home and I phoned my sister, whom I hadn't spoken to for 10 years, because we'd had a big falling out, a big bust up, and I knew I had to do it differently. I had to be the one to cross the burning bridge, and I did, and we're back together again, and it's great, it's been beautiful, and all thanks to that sermon on Joseph forgiving his brothers." So, there you go, definitely, at least once, I've preached a sermon that changed someone's life. Over the years, I've met many people whose lives are burdened by brokenness and betrayal, wounds and hurts, bitterness and division. Live in our world and you soon discover that there's plenty of that stuff around. Broken hearts and bruised egos, feelings crushed by someone else's actions or insensitivity, families fractured by ancient feuds. Plenty of reasons given to explain and justify why people feel resentful, angry, vengeful, why hearts are hardened, wrath nursed to keep it warm, old resentments that fester and suppurate in the soul. The real world where real people live. Our world, it's out there. Help. They had to live with it for years. Their abiding shame. The cruel, cruel lie. The dark, terrible secret that hung like a shadow over their souls. They had sold their brother into slavery because he was so bloody annoying. And now, who knows where he was, their brother Joseph, was he dead or alive? When they told Jacob, their father, it was as if they had stabbed him through the heart. He grew old before their eyes as he carried his inconsolable grief towards the grave. Joseph, his darling son, missing, presumed dead. Meanwhile, over in Egypt, a star is born. You remember how it goes? Any dream will do. Joseph is hauled out of prison to interpret Pharaoh's disturbing dream. Joseph's analysis seems to fit the facts, and Pharaoh finds peace of mind. The reward is staggering. Joseph is granted second place in the kingdom, and his stunning meteoric rise from obscurity is completed. Appointed minister of food, just in time to deal with the impending crisis of famine, he is well able to manage the national emergency. The famine came to Canaan, sharp and sudden. Jacob and his remaining sons are getting worried. "You must go to Egypt. There are rumours that they have good stocks of food there. It's our only hope. Go now." And another bedraggled band of economic migrants trudges towards their last hope. Eventually, they arrive weary, anxious and full of anticipation in Egypt. Prime Minister Joseph surveys the morning intelligence reports as they land on his desk. "Hebrews? Here?" He can hardly contain his excitement. Perhaps they have news of his family. Oh my gosh, it is his family. The years have changed him. The beat-up ragdoll they last saw blubbing down in the pit is now the richly robed, imperious, urbane Egyptian dignitary, fluent in the language, kowtowed by servants, unrecognisable. The brothers bow low before their master. Ironic, really, just like Joseph's own dream from long ago, the very one that had pushed the brothers over the edge. If we can imagine ourselves into the position of those hearing this story for the first time, we can appreciate that for them, the tension would be building up to an almost unbearable climax. What is Joseph going to do with his power? What is he going to do with them? A process of disorientation, fake arrests, false accusations, reinforces their sense of vulnerability and helplessness. Is Joseph softening them up for the kill? Toying with them like a sleek Siamese cat with a terrified mouse? Release, catch, release, catch. Is he taking prolonged and subtle vengeance on them in his cold, quiet, measured, relentless way, reducing them to squabbling, panic-stricken wrecks? And what will the final outcome be for these brothers who once had treated him so unspeakably, now that Joseph has the whip hand. He can break them, snap them like twigs if he wants. He holds all the aces. He decides whether they live or die. Revenge is sweet. Revenge is a dish best served cold. Revenge is respectable. Movies, novels, plays, they all offer revenge as the logical and acceptable response to betrayal or hurt. Revenge is an okay 21st century way of dealing with bad relationships, wounds inflicted on us, damage done to us. Don't forgive, don't forget. You can't let people walk all over you. They are the problem, not you. A modern day mantra that echoes down the blood-stained centuries. That's right, Joseph. You play with them. Make them pay for what they did to you. Remember what it was like being a slave? Remember the injustices, the long-forgotten years in prison, the darkness and the scuttling feet of the rats, and no hope? That was them, Joseph. They did that to you. These men trembling before you now. You rotted and they laughed. You have them now, Joseph. Take them. Revenge. Revenge. That's what they all say. All the extremists whose actions disfigure our world, all those ancient grudges stored up over the decades, Hezbollah, Hamas at war with the State of Israel, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, Albanians and Serbs, Georgians and Russians, Turks and Greeks, the slighted neighbour, the wounded lover, revenge, revenge, until the twisting spiral of hatred becomes a tourniquet of horror and inhumanity that chokes our world. Maybe there's another way. Joseph's way. How about this one? Revenge is sweet, but forgiveness is sweeter. Here is where true strength of character and nobility lie. Revenge, the juvenile childish response. Forgiveness, the adult mature response. Joseph forgives his brothers. And what could have been just another oldie worldy saga of satisfied ego and violent pride, another Game of Thrones red wedding bloodbath, instead becomes a great classic moment of beauty, humanity and forgiveness. The Joseph story that would have been just instantly forgettable had it turned into another slaughter. It would have been the same old ugly tale of a weak man trapped by cultural assumptions and the needs of a nagging pride and egotism. Instead of that vile, sad little cliché, we have all the sweet grandeur of Joseph, the exemplar of another way, doing something beautiful in the Spirit of God. Like the story of the Jew in conversation with his former camp guard, the guard now himself a prisoner for war crimes. The former guard says, "Why don't you take it out on me? Why don't you beat me and torture me as I beat and humiliated and tortured you?" And angrily the Jew replies, "Because it has to stop." The cycle of hate and more hate, viciousness and more viciousness, bitterness and more bitterness. I have to meet your hate with my love or we will never break free. I have to find a way out of the cul-de-sac of hatred. It can be done differently. When the new nation of South Africa was trying to redeem its terrible and bloody apartheid past, it established the Commission for Just and Reconciliation under the chairmanship of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, a society agreeing that to build a nation state on the shaky foundation of racial hatred and bitter recollections of ancient wrongs was to court disaster, that another way had to be explored. And something creative salvaged from the wreckage. And through all of this, Joseph sees the hand of God. God changing the self-centred, spoiled brat into the generous, big-hearted, gracious Joseph, capable of an act of extraordinary sensitivity and beauty. All God's work with Joseph, through the perplexing circumstances of his life, had been to prepare him for this moment. How will he use the absolute power he has over his brothers, life and death in his hands? Will he respond with the blind, unthinking way of vengeance, or has he come through the fire of his own experiences, the kind of man capable of a giant step of forgiveness? To read the story with sensitivity is to be greatly moved. The dramatic denouement, the last act of the drama, has all the key characters gathered and Joseph reveals his true identity. It is I, Joseph, your brother. They can't believe it. They don't really want to believe it, because if it is Joseph, it surely means big trouble. He reassures them, don't look so afraid. I only want to give you the best. You are forgiven. You are forgiven. Healing words with miraculous power. You are forgiven. The challenge is there for us. If there's an angry lump of hate or resentment in our hearts, a sliver of ice in our soul, that deliberate hardening of our heart against the person who's become distanced from us, if that ugly thing is in our story, the challenge is to try the way of healing and forgiveness. To go home and get on the phone and say, look, this is stupid. Life's too short. I'm sorry. We've wasted so much time, lost so much time. And even if we are the wronged ones, as Joseph was, most surely the wronged one, still, nonetheless, to open those healing channels of forgiveness that will release us from the prison, to write the letter, make the call, knock on the door. Life is too short to carry all that junk around with us. Broken relationships, simmering resentments. They rob us of our peace of mind. The liberating power of forgiveness invites us to take the initiative, to cross the burning bridge, reach out the hand. Us, first, because we have seen and wondered at the beautiful thing that is reconciliation, because we know it is right, it is the Spirit of Christ who is the reconciler. Imagine the wonderful fruit of this experience, if people today, in response to the truth of God, became instruments of healing and remaking, crying tears if need be. Is that the screech of brakes I hear? The screeching, crunching, grinding of gears? Easy for you to say, you may be thinking. Your life hasn't been upended by someone else the way mine has. Easy for you to talk about the beautiful thing that forgiveness is. Try walking a couple of miles in my shoes. See how tasty, easy, or possible forgiveness is then. Fair point. Absolutely fair point. I can only say this, that when people tell me about how, in the grace of God, in the power of God's Spirit, they have dealt with hatred, anger, and bitterness, and found a way through to the kind of healing and forgiveness in the heart, the real forgiveness that Joseph found, then they have been liberated, they tell me, unburdened, filled with the peace of Christ. Hearts that were shut were opened. Eyes that were clouded by anger and hatred and shame were able to see loveliness again. And it was better, it was beautiful, it was right. So if you don't want to listen to me, listen to them.